AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston in Pyongyang. The welcome ceremony for Russian President Vladimir Putin, who is visiting North Korea, thanking leader Kim Jong-un for his support in the ongoing invasion of Ukraine. An early scorcher from Missouri through Maine, record high temperatures this June for much of the country. It was election day on Tuesday for some, including in Virginia, where Eugene Vindman, a key witness in the first Trump impeachment trial, won the Democratic primary for the Commonwealth's 7th Congressional District.
My message is going to remain consistent. I'm a centrist. I've always been middle of the road. I spent 25 years in the Army.
Congressman Bob Good, chair of the Hard Right Freedom Caucus, locked in a tight race with State Senator John McGuire in Virginia's 5th District. McGuire has the support of Donald Trump. A lot of people across the country remembering the great Willie Mays, who died on Tuesday at the age of 93. This is ABC News. The nation's second largest school district has decided to ban cell phone use by students on campuses.
LA school board members say teachers are asking for help, that policing kids using their phones in classrooms has become a major problem, and now the board has voted for a ban on cell phone use on campuses. It will impact around 500,000 students. LAUSD board member Nick Melvoin.
The schools that have gone farther and that have already implemented a phone-free school day report incredible results. Kids are happier. They're talking to one another. They're academic. Are up.
Details of the ban will be worked out later, like how to regulate smartwatches. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
The Florida Panthers could not take advantage of their second chance to win the Stanley Cup as the Edmonton Oilers stayed alive with a 5-3 win in Game 5. The teams make the long flight from South Florida to Edmonton for Game 6 on Friday. The Panthers, who once led the series 3-0, now lead 3-2. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Sure, the home seller's market is hot right now, but that means many people are jumping at the first offer. When you sell with the most trusted name in real estate, the Aaron Weber Group at First Weber, you're guaranteed the hottest offer, making you the most money for your home. The Aaron Weber Group, powered by First Weber, your local realtor, friend, and neighbor, has your best interest in mind and wants you to make the most of this amazing time to sell. Bring a little heat to your home selling experience with Aaron Weber Group and move to Madison.com.
Do you know or work with kids who have special health care needs? Help them live their best lives. Contact Wisconsin Wayfinder Children's Resource Network. Our specialists will connect you with services in your area. Wisconsin Wayfinder is free and confidential. Call 877-947-2929 or visit dhs.wi.gov/wiscway. Connect today. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WMDX website at mad.radio.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Donald Trump tells a rally in Wisconsin Tuesday that he wants to be the law and order president.
I will be the president for law-abiding Americans, every background, every walk of life, every race, religion, color, and creed. I'll be the president.
Trump was convicted of 34 felonies in a recent hush money trial. Trump campaigned in Racine. Wisconsin's Supreme Court will hear a challenge to Governor Evers' 400-year school funding increase. Evers used his line item veto to make changes that give Wisconsin schools a per-pupil funding boost for the next four centuries. Wisconsin governors have sweeping veto powers, but the courts have put limits on striking single words or letters. Justices announced Monday that they will take the case. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers win with a spectacular catch. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 6-3 victory over the Angels. Down by three, the Angels' Taylor Ward took the ball deep to center field, but there was Sal Frelick to take it in on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
It's the 1-2 pitch. That ball's driven deep right center field. Frelick is there. He leaps, and he makes the catch! Oh, my goodness! What a play!
Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
It's interesting. We had a conversation in outfield for the game. I talked to two of their players. They were doing a drill. Let me ask you guys something. Is it me or we've had more robbed home runs this year than ever in the existence of the game? And they're like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yes, we have too. And then the game ends like this tonight.
And Willie Mays has died. In his first ever at bat, Mays hit a home run off Braves pitcher Warren Spahn. He was named to the All-Star team 24 times. Willie Mays was 93. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, showers and thunderstorms are possible. Partly sunny skies and highs in the upper 70s. For tonight, scattered showers and storms and a low of 65. Mostly cloudy, 78 on Thursday with an isolated thunderstorm. For Friday, scattered storms and a high near 87.
It's 76 at our studios.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Night Light, singing duo 7,000 Apart joins me in studio as they prepare for their big appearance at Summerfest, and comedian Mike Siegel joins to discuss 80s TV shows.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who wears a bathing suit in the shower, Pete Schwabba.
From the 920, Steve says, in honor of Walt Disney, you got to pay respect to Walt's first full-length animated movie back in 1937, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. This movie set the stage for all future animated movies. Shrek is my second choice because the writers were brilliant on drawing both young and old into the movie from the beginning of the movie to the end. Well said, Steve. Michael from Tosa says, I love Dogma, referring to Kevin Smith movies we just discussed with Lisa. And Michael also says his favorite animated film is Heavy Metal. I got to see this. I have not seen American Pop, and I have not seen Heavy Metal. Two I have to add to my list. Michael also says, thank you for the Wisconsin Dells tickets. I think that I won them while listening to your show. Hey, that's Conrad.
Congrats. That's
all
awesome.
All right. I want a taste, Michael. Just let me come by and use the pool. That's all I ask.
The lazy river.
Have a great time. Yeah. Knock those kids out of the way. Okay, so I'm very excited to welcome my next guest. He's been on Nightlight before, and we always have fun talking. He's just a phenomenal storyteller, and he is well-versed in movies and TV, and he is a good friend of mine, and he joins us now over the interwebs. Mike Schmidt. Hey, Mike.
Well, hi, Pete Schwabba. How are you?
Well, how are you? It's good to see you.
I'm good, thank you. Am I coming through crystal clear? I know the Hollywood to Wisconsin pipeline sometimes get a little jammed up,
no,
so I want to make sure you can hear me.
Fiber optic, buddy. There is no flaw in the system. We've perfected it.
Right. Well, that's on your end over here. I've got a mouse running and a wheel. I've got all sorts of crazy things. I'm just hoping it's sending me out there.
You've shared your tech flaws with us in the past, and
it's a terrible thing. Clearly.
Have you seen
the oldest thing about me?
Have you seen Heavy Metal?
What's funny? I'm glad you brought it up, because if you didn't, I was just going to yell at you for no reason, but now I get to yell at you because you asked.
Love it. Love that.
I can't believe you're my age from the Midwest and you didn't see Heavy Metal at least 10 times. What is wrong with you?
You know, I've owned the sound.
I'm going to stop you. I've owned the soundtrack on vinyl, cassette, and CD. I mean, seriously.
Okay.
Yeah. So whoever wrote this in, yes, he's absolutely right. And I'm stunned you haven't seen it.
There's like three people that said Heavy Metal tonight. And I'm going to be honest, Mike, Heavy Metal scared me as a youth.
Really?
Metallica, they look so scary and just sound like, I'm like, I don't know what to make of these. And then I get older and I'm like, God, they're just, the name is just crazy. They have good songs, you know, like,
yeah, exactly. Well, Heavy Metal, the movies from like 82, that's pre-Metallica. So I'm sure 82 is Judas Priest and all that. But I mean, dude, the soundtrack has Sammy Hagar. The soundtrack has Cheap Trick, one of the best Cheap Trick songs ever, Reach Out and Take It.
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal. Don Felder. I mean, it's not heavy metal music like Crazy Murder. It's like, do you know what Heavy Metal magazine was? Do you know that?
No.
Okay, Heavy Metal magazine was. Are you familiar? All right, we're going to ask more questions. Are you familiar with the Illustrated Conan O'Brien or Creepy magazines or Evil. There was Creepy and Evil were magazines. Those Frank Frazetta, Big Muscles and Half Naked Chicks, those magazines.
Mike, I know Mad and Cracked. That's where my literary knowledge ends there, sadly.
Well, and those are great. But these fantasy magazines, Heavy Metal was one of those. And it would have these, like, you know, half naked women space pirates fighting three-headed dragons and you know, with like nipples bursting through sheer costumes and hand-drawn, brilliant. Again, Frank Frazetta, total over-the-top muscles and fighting. And then they made, so the Heavy Metal people made the movie, and it's in the animation style of the actual magazine. And it's, there's a ton of nudity, a ton of nude ladies.
Conrad, take a memo. And,
nude ladies in Black Sabbath. I mean, what more do I have to tell you, sir?
Listen,
that's it. That's a party.
I don't like immorality, Mike. I don't like, I don't like, wow. Listen, I got to check
changed.
It out. Because, I don't know. What have you heard?
I've known you a long time, buddy.
I have American Pop too is another one. I remember seeing the ads for it in the late 70s. I think maybe it was 1980.
Yeah.
And I was too young to see it, you know, and I just never saw it. So that's been on my, I always thought that looked kind of cool.
That's a Ralph Bakshi, I believe.
Okay.
Have you seen Fritz the Cat?
No.
Oh, see that? That would, that set the tone for all sorts of like adult animations back in the 70s/80s.
Okay.
What are you doing? What are you doing with yourself? Stop interviewing just, people and start, you know, educating yourself.
Like a lot of scripture and retreats and that kind of thing, Mike.
Right. Watching Willie Ames and Bible Man. You're doing all that cool stuff.
Love Willie Ames and Scott Baio.
You know, you should, but yeah, Heavy Metal is an absolute must see. And I'll bet at this point, Joe could watch it. You know, I don't know how you are with what he sees, but he's old enough, man, where he could absolutely, he probably even seen it.
Mike. Okay. To give you some idea of how different raising kids is now, at least in our house, I was watching, Joe's first of all, 23. So he watches everything.
I know.
He drops F bombs in front of me. I've lost control of the whole, and we're watching Saltburn about 2 months ago. And my daughter, who's 18, comes in and says, "Have you seen the bathtub scene yet?" <I'm> like, I go, "No." And then I saw it and I was horrified. But they don't even watch the movies. They're just like seeing clips online. And it's just crazy.
Well, to that, I literally, the only thing I've seen from Saltburn is the bathtub scene.
Yeah.
I saw it on social media and then I just went, "Yeah, that doesn't look like it's for me. Probably I'm going to go ahead and skip Saltburn," and then talk to our friend, mutual friend, Pat, who saw it. And he wrote me and he's like, and I don't, can I spoil something or shall I not?
It's been out for months. You can spoil.
Okay.
Just all I know is
I said, I was like, "Hey, Saltburn, did you sit through it?" Cause he saw it in the theater.
Oh, wow.
So he's in a room full of people being uncomfortable at the bathtub scene. And he goes, "Did you see Talented Mr. Ripley?" And I said, "Yes." He goes, "It's that. You don't need to watch this. It's a bad, gross version of Talented Mr. Ripley." And I was like, "All right, yeah, and I'll take his word for it." And then even when it came on streaming, I'm weird. Like if something comes out and there's a big buzz, if I don't see it quick and it falls out of that zeitgeisty type of thing, I'll pass. And it's my own fault. Like I've never seen Game of Thrones.
That's how it was with me in Heavy Metal. No, you know what? Game of Thrones, though, I did. I saw Game. I was late to the party, but I did watch Game of Thrones and I watched all the seasons and I see it's a little addicting and it's not terrible. It's a little gratuitous, but so was Saltburn. But her film before that, Promising Young Woman, was great. And
boy, I liked it.
Yeah. And there were parts of Saltburn. It kind of had me. And then it just got like, oh, come on. It just got too much, you know?
Really?
Anyway. Yeah. For me. But
yeah, I hear you. Well, I mean, not just for you, man. I heard it from a lot. It's one of those polarizing, you know what I mean? I just saw a movie like that last night that I'd heard a lot about it. And then I decided I would watch it. And I was transfixed. Like I love it.
What was the movie?
I want to talk to everybody about it.
Oh, you told me. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called I Saw the TV Glow.
Yeah.
And, I saw it yesterday. And again, it's been out a month, maybe, I think.
Yep.
And I heard a lot about it, you know, like I said, I'm very careful not to, like, I'll watch one trailer for a movie and then I'm out. I don't want to see you exposing more and more of the plot or the things. And also I don't pay attention to the discourse until I've seen it. Like usually I'll see the movie and then I'll go search all the discourse and see what everybody said and the plots are surmising, right, all that. But I had a general knowledge that this was in the air, like in the zeitgeist, like I said. So I watched it last night and boy, I mean, it's a beautiful film. It's really, it's, you know, a little psychological drama horror. And it hits, there's themes And there's an apocryphal, and there's all sorts of different things. I don't want to give things away, but I'm seeing the discourse now, and it's very divisive. There are people who are like, don't they shake their fist at it? Then there are people who are like, it's very important to them. And I understand why. And I say, when I watched it, I got to be honest, I didn't pick up on the metaphor specifically, but I picked up on a metaphor and I was close. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So the plot itself,
see it. Yeah.
It's real good. I mean, I'm telling you, dude. And the performances, there's really only like six actors in it, but they're just, I mean, the two leads are amazing, and it's so beautiful. I really found it very much reminded me of when I saw Get Out. I saw that in a theater, and I wanted to watch it 10 times. Like all I wanted to do was like stop people in the street and go, did you see Get Out? Let's talk. I saw that and Logan in a double feature. And as much as I loved Logan, all I could think about was Get Out for like 3 weeks. And that's how this movie landed with me last night. I saw the TV glow. I just found it to be just a very beautiful and chilling. It's, you know, there's all sorts, and it makes you think about 100 things. I loved it.
Oh, that's so cool. Let me just ask you, when you say there's a lot of people that shook their fist at the film, was that in the 1950s when you saw these people?
They were. I saw a guy in a pork pie hat with a press pass in it, and he was furious. He actually said, why I oughta? He got it from the screening, said, why I oughta, and he stormed out. Went right into a phone booth, called his editor.
I was trying to think of a phone booth. I couldn't think of the phone booth. So we got a texter, Jim from Appleton, one of our regular listeners, says, this guy Mike is awesome. He listed a couple of great Bakshi movies. Fritz the Cat is wonderful. Wizards epic. My favorite is still Lord of the Rings. Okay.
There you go.
Well, Jim, check out Mike's podcast, The 40-Year-Old Boy. Why don't you get a plug in there, Mike?
Well, eventually, but we're here to have a regular conversation. You can't be a plug machine from the jump.
Yeah, but this is like organic the way this is happening.
Well, you know, I have a YouTube channel where you can get the archives of 14 years of the 40-Year-Old Boy podcast.
Nice.
It's just youtube.com/the40-year-old boy, and it's the number 40 in there. So it's the 40-Year-Old Boy. If you just Google the 40-Year-Old Boy in YouTube, you'll find my channel. The show's available wherever you get all your podcasts, Spotify. You can get it at Amazon Music. You can get it on the internet, of course. And and subscribe. It's at Apple Podcasts. It's everywhere. You know, I'll admit we've been a little slow going recently. There've been some issues inside of my skull, but there's plenty of archives that you can check out from the 14 years. If you go to the YouTube channel, and he's very nice. And also, I've never seen Bakshi's animated Lord of the Rings. I've heard amazing things.
Okay.
Cause I've seen, I love, I've saw the extended versions of the movies. I own them. I got them for Christmas one year, and they're just, I mean, that's a weekend. You just throw those in and don't go anywhere. I love it.
That's excellent. Thanks for the text, Jim. Yeah. Check out Mike's YouTube channel and the 40-Year-Old Boy. Very funny and great logo too, Mike. I don't know if I ever told you that. I love it. You told
my
me
buddy
who designed
David.
That. Yeah. Tell us who designed that again. It's great.
My buddy, David Hernandez, who, you know what? I'm going to do this. He also has his own podcast called, the Phlegm Cat Podcast. The Phlegm Cat Podcast. That's two words, Phlegm, Phlegm, Cat, C-A-T, the Phlegm Cat Podcast. And he is the most talented person I've ever met in my life.
Well, there you go.
He can play any instrument from ear. He can play it from, you know, he can pick up a guitar, a bass, piano, drums, keyboards. He plays them all. He did my theme songs. He did my logos. He did all the merch when we had merch. He designed a tour poster when I went out. He is an unbelievably talented guy. And that logo is so perfect and so simple. Chinnery saw it once, our buddy Chip Chinnery. And because when he heard 40-Year-Old Boy, he's like, you've got to market this. Like, you need that. That's such an amazing branding opportunity. I'm like, I can't even do a podcast, a branding opportunity.
Mike, hold
that. And then
he
saw the logo.
Hold that.
Oops, sorry.
We got to do. No problem. I want you to keep going, but we got to do a quick thing. My guest is Mike Schmidt. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabo. We'll be right back. And we're talking Quentin Tarantino. Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Are you looking to kick up your nighttime entertainment? Good times await you at the Lazy Wolf Lounge, Madison's east side place for friends and family to meet for fun and food. Test your knowledge with Monday trivia. Let your inner rock star out with Thursday karaoke, plus live music, and meet all your friends at the Lazy Wolf for the big game. The Lazy Wolf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook or at lazywolflounge.com.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom.
She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You know.
Conrad and I were slow dancing during the break. It is Barry Manilow's birthday. He is 82 this week, folks. Pretend you don't like him, but I don't believe you. Mike Schmidt is my guest. You can check out his 40-year-old boy podcast. Very funny stand-up comedian. And I got to tell you, all this talk about David, it's emasculating, Mike. This guy can do everything. He's like a Renaissance man. I don't even know if I can.
How do you think I feel? I have a show where I think I'm real funny, and he does all the other. He does the cool stuff. All I do is talk. I saw Barry Manilow in Green Bay.
No kidding.
Yeah, at the gamblers play,
the mall?
Wherever that is.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
No, yeah, I saw him perform. I didn't see him at the mall.
He was getting glamour shots. He needed new.
He was
pictures.
Busking. He had a little Casio tone. He was out there. He had a little watch that played a tune. David Sanborn on the sax.
I was telling Conrad and my last guest that growing up on the northwest side of Chicago in the city with a bunch of cops kids. Barry Manilow was not Barry Manilow. He was barely man enough. That's what they called him.
I worked in a record store where we had to write the labels. Well, there was this old school thing. You'd put a label on the album with the name of the artist and the price. And when someone bought it, you would have to peel the label. It was serrated on the sides or whatever, perforated. And
yeah.
You would pull it off. And then he would save that. And so all day at the end of the day, you knew who sold. It was like old school billboard, whatever needed. And my Brian, who I worked with, would write Barely Man Enough on all the Barry Manilow's tickets.
It wasn't just the guys
no,
in my neighborhood. That was a nationwide thing.
Made it to the suburbs. Yeah.
I love them.
I love them too. I love them that I, again, I can't hear Weekend in New England without being wrecked. I can't hear Mandy without one time my ma had friends in Cicero. So you know how Chicago is. Like, we went over there, and my ma and her friends, they all played Canasta till 3 a.m. while we ran around with the lights out in the basement playing Don't Run Into the Cement Post. You know how that works.
Right.
And you got pizza and fried shrimp at midnight while you watch Creature Features. It was fantastic.
And awesome.
They had a jukebox. Kay and Bill had a jukebox, and we played Mandy over and
I'm 9, 10
maybe. And we just kept playing it over and over. And it's just emblazoned in my brain, man. He was great. People can say whatever they want. He's great.
He is great. And it's funny because like now all I have is the Simpsons rendition of Mandy when Homer's putting on deodorant because he has a crush on a coworker and he's singing, "Oh, Mindy, you came and you gave without flaking," and like goes out of this whole thing.
No, man, that is beautiful. Those are great songs. Weekend in New England is so crazy. I write the songs they're all, again, he's got, I mean, my mom had the double vinyl where he had the live album and he had that medley of the commercials he'd written. You know what I mean? Even that, he made that a hit for
right.
Christ's sake,
right.
You know, him singing literally Barry Manilow singing by men and it goes to the chart for some reason. It's great.
Oh, that's my first AM radio. Was I Write the Songs and the Bay City Rollers are the two songs that I remember hearing. And it was, oh my God. And Barry Manilow, okay, you said Weekend in New England. There's the line in there that says Long Rocky Beaches and You by the Bay. So I told a couple college buddies that he was in a relationship with Yul Brynner and that song was for Yul Brynner. And he's actually saying Long Rocky Beaches and You by the Bay. And they totally believed me. They're like,
no way.
I never would have caught that. That's because I made
Thanks,
it up.
Pete. you're the resident Manilow expert. You're interpreting the lyrics. Everybody's like, God, thank man. Good thing Schwab is here.
He is on it. I don't care if he's seen heavy metal or not. He knows everything about Manilow. So, Mike, let's get to Tarantino, man. I've been reading all this stuff about his 10th movie project, and there, you know, hits hiccups, and we don't know when it's happening, and all this kind of stuff. He says he's only directing 10 films. I believe him, but. I got to think he's not going to stop. He's going to do something, either produce or still write or something. Don't you think he's a young guy?
Yeah, he's not stopping. Things are things are fuzzy now. He was doing the 10th movie. It was called The Movie Critic. And
yeah,
supposedly Brad Pitt had been cast, but he wasn't the lead. And there were rumors he was trying to get Cruise to be the guy.
Okay.
There was all sorts of stories. And then all of a sudden he just announced, yeah, man, it's not my movie. I'm not doing it. Which he's been known to do that. Hmm. You know, I mean, when the script for Hateful Eight leaked, he was like, I'm not doing it now. He scrapped the whole idea. And then eventually he revisited it and said, all right, I think it takes him 4.5 years, 5 years, 6 years to write a film. So I think he'd felt scrapping 6 years of his work would have been foolish, but he's also impetuous and he can make his own rules. You know, he can do what he wants.
Right.
What I genuinely thought was I did believe that that would be the last movie he directed for film release for another studio. I thought the 10th movie was going to be his farewell to that. And then either Amazon or Netflix would give him $300 million to be an in-house filmmaker to do whatever he wanted to do, develop series, write movies, and then they would be exclusively released on the streaming services as a perk to get more people to join. Like we are getting, like almost like in, you know, you can see with entertainment now, it almost like to sign him to exclusivity is almost like a baseball team signing a free agent.
Yeah, right.
Where you improve your whole organization by bringing in this guy. And so I truly thought he was going to be the one, because, you know, Scorsese does the films for Netflix.
Yeah.
And without as much fanfare as there should be, quite frankly, because he's a reigning auteur and people should celebrate it, because we all become so snarky and we make fun of everything. It doesn't get the level of import it should. But he has enough of a cultural footprint that I thought he would be a game changer in that way. And then he scrapped the 10th movie and I was like, oh boy. You know, I don't know what he's going to do. And also he's got a thing going on now where, you know, he's married and I think he has one kid now. He's married and he lives in Israel half the time.
Tarantino.
And yeah, he's really? Married to a woman. And I don't want to talk out of school here. Perhaps our good friend Conrad can look it up. Go ahead, double K. But it was like, there've been pictures of him with Israeli troops, like online.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like before October 7th.
Huh.
Okay, I don't know about since, but he's been supportive verbally. And so then there's that issue where people are angry because, you know how it is with the world now. I see why people can be angry with someone's stance, but then they want to say that, you know, it invalidates what he does as an artist and all of these things. And again, that's a far deeper conversation that you want to have on this show, I'm sure. But so I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. When he canceled the 10th movie, I was kind of like, I didn't know if it had anything to do with what's going on with his wife and where he lives and all of that situation, or if he just decided, you know what, man, this isn't doing it for me. I'm going to pivot and do a different thing. I don't know.
I thought I just read something the other day where the talks are starting again, but it's interesting what you say, because he could still do, if he goes that route where he just gets the $300 million contract, he can still finish his 10th movie and say, well, no, I did 10 movies. I stuck to it. Now I'm doing movies here. And it's still, right. It's a qualifier, but you know, so what? I just want him to keep making films.
But he's also a guy who always, like I've seen him, I've met him like just once and it was totally brief and ridiculous. I'll tell this story. My friend did a Quentin Tarantino burlesque show.
Do you want to
and
hold
invited
on.
Him?
If this is a classic Schmitty story, let's wait. We have to do news. Well, I'm just saying, I don't want to have to cut
That's
you
fine.
Off in the middle of it. So let's come back with that.
Sure.
And then we'll do your, I want to ask you your favorite Tarantino film, your least favorite, assuming that you still love your least favorite because you love Tarantino. Right. But yes. Mike Schmidt is my guest. He is here to talk about Quentin Tarantino. And we are finally getting to Quentin Tarantino because we get off on tangents and he's fun to talk to. So we'll talk about Quentin Tarantino next. And I want to hear your meeting with, and if we have time, Mike, I'd love for you to tell the story about when you met John Tesh. Because that's another awesome one.
Oh, that's
one.
Easy. That's a quick one.
All right. More coming up with Mike Schmidt on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network. Bring a friend, join the crowd, whoever want to come along. Word up, talk, talk, just move right up the wall. Dare light, sky's the light, so we dance to the breakdown. Ladies and gentlemen, I got the medicine, so you should keep your eyes on the ball. This is getting heavy, can you hear the bass? Boom, I'm ready. Levy's sitting, honey, yeah, this bitch is chilling like money.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston in Pyongyang. The welcome. welcome ceremony for Russian President Vladimir Putin, who is visiting North Korea, thanking leader Kim Jong-un for his support in the ongoing invasion of Ukraine. An early scorcher this summer from Missouri through Maine, record high temperatures in June. It was election day for some on Tuesday, including in Virginia, where Eugene Vindman, a key witness in the first Trump impeachment trial, won the Democratic primary for the Commonwealth's 7th Congressional District.
My message is going to remain consistent. I'm a centrist. I've always been middle of the road. I spent 25 years in the Army.
Congressman Bob Good, chair of the Hard Right Freedom Caucus, locked in a tight race with State Senator John McGuire in Virginia's 5th District. McGuire has a support of Donald Trump. The Edmonton Oilers won Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final last night, and lots of folks today remembering the great Willie Mays, who died Tuesday at the age of 93. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services wants people attending fairs and petting zoos to be careful interacting with animals this summer. A new strain of bird flu is affecting dairy cattle in other states, but state epidemiologist Thomas Hopp says the risk for humans is very low.
We're going to be working with the local public health departments and providers to be sure that we're testing people who need to be tested, but we also want to assure the public that it's not a panic situation as yet.
DHS recommends fairgoers take simple precautions, like washing their hands and avoiding animals that look sick. The Juneteenth flag was raised at the state capitol building on Tuesday. Governor Evers has ordered the flag be flown until sunset on Wednesday. Juneteenth celebrates the emancipation of enslaved Black and African people in the United States, and it has been a federal holiday since 2021. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis has found a distribution partner and will hit U.S. theaters this fall. The 5-time Oscar winner invested $120 million of his own money for his passion project, according to the Los Angeles Times. The film screened at the Cannes Film Festival, where critics responded favorably. The cast of Megalopolis includes Adam Driver, Lawrence Fishburne, Aubrey Plaza, and Giancarlo Esposito. Megalopolis opens September 27th. The relatively squeaky clean image of Justin Timberlake just took a hit. The pop star and actor was cited for a DWI and a few other moving violations while driving in the Hamptons after leaving a friend's party. Timberlake reportedly refused to take a field sobriety test initially, then told one of the police officers that this was going to ruin the tour. The police did say Timberlake was a total gentleman, but had no choice but to cite him when they asked him to walk a straight line and he wasn't in sync. Hi-oh! For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, showers and thunderstorms are possible. Partly sunny skies and highs in the upper 70s. For tonight, scattered showers and storms and a low of 65. Mostly cloudy, 78 on Thursday with an isolated thunderstorm. For Friday, scattered storms and a high near 87.
Currently, 75 degrees.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
What is the worst movie franchise? Do you have one, Conrad?
What are your thoughts on Transformers?
I saw one Transformer movie. I think it was the first one. I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
I can't get into them anymore because, you know, it's the same every movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if you knew which Transformer. I know there's like testosterone and overload and whatever they, you know.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we come to you live from Baraboo, Wisconsin for Juneteenth. Our friend and colleague Earl Ingram joins us. You don't want to miss it. See you then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
your favorite animated film of all time. We were paying homage to Inside Out 2, which shattered box office records this past weekend and maybe single-handedly saved this summer's box office. So that is our question. What is your favorite animated film of all time? Great text so far. I would say Shrek is leading the pack. And I'm doing this not having seen either of the Inside Outs. My guest is Mike Schmidt. He is the host of the 40-Year-Old Boy podcast, which you can check out on a host of different platforms, and a very funny comedian. Mike, we were talking about Tarantino. You were about to tell me the story of when you met him.
Oh, I was, wasn't I? I forgot.
You don't have to tell.
I was.
Okay.
Well, no, no. Because, all right, I will tell you, I had one encounter. I've seen him live. I saw Pulp Fiction and him do talks afterwards. I've gone to see him more than a few times. I saw Reservoir Dogs with him. I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on my birthday, a week before it opened, in a packed ArcLight with him in a special screening. So I've been that guy.
Nice.
Reservoir Dogs is my favorite movie of all time. So just to let you know who you're talking to.
Okay.
Here. And I love a lot of movies. I love a lot of filmmakers. I love a lot of things. And I'm not saying Reservoir Dogs is his best film, but it's my favorite film because it's the first time I ever went to a movie theater and I saw a movie. And at the end of it, I thought someone had made a movie specifically for me.
Nice.
They were just like, we're going to hit everything that all this fake tough guy stuff, all this braggadocio, and then Mr. Blonde. I mean, all of it was crazy. I mean, it was so good. This is a true story. I walked out of the theater. It was in LA. It opened here. It was in limited release. I read a review of it in the LA Times. It's the only way I found out about it. And it was tough guys doing a jewel robbery. I'm like, oh, I'll check this out. I wasn't doing anything at the time. So we went that afternoon. I walked across the street to a Rite Aid and I got change for the payphone. That's how long ago this was. And called my friends in Chicago from a payphone to tell them about the movie I had just seen. And then I walked across the street and I watched it again.
Nice.
It was a bombshell for me. It was crazy.
That is great.
It's funny because I kind of dismissed the meeting him story, but in truth, it's a pretty great story. My friend, Lily, who was the producer of my podcast for like the first 8 years, ran a burlesque show in Los Angeles. She was a burlesque dancer.
Bunched up, and so right?
Lily von Stupp, that's my friend, exactly.
I love that
and
name.
So she's the best. And so she did a tribute to Tarantino burlesque show. And she invited him, like just threw it out to his press people or whatever. I don't remember the process, but then she got a note. He wanted a private performance of this burlesque show. And he would rent a venue. And she was like, they were like, how much would it cost? And she told them, and they just said, okay. And I was the MC, I was the host, and Lily rented the venue. And this was when he was filming Inglourious Basterds, or he had just wrapped. And he brought BJ Novak, he brought Elvis Mitchell, he brought all the crew people, and him and a ton of friends and cast members, Omar Doom from the movie. We had a private performance for them. So I was able to meet him. And I did stand up in front of him, and then I got to meet him and tell him how much he meant to me and how much dogs meant to me. And he got to tell me that he thought I was really effing funny. And I was like, it doesn't get any better than that. Does it get any better than that? It probably
it
doesn't.
It does not get any better than that. What year was that?
This is, Bastards is what? 2007, I'm going to guess.
Sounds about
something like that. It's right about whatever year Bastards came out. So 2007, 8.
So you don't have a pic. You don't have like a selfie of it or a picture or anything like that.
I'm in a group photo with a bunch of burlesque dancers and him.
Oh, that's
he's
cool.
In the center. And but it's a picture that honestly I hate because I was leaning forward. And I had my mouth wide open and they took the picture. And that's the one they used. Like I wasn't even ready. They were just like snapping photos. And I'm like I'm getting adjusted. Big guy getting adjusted. And I'm in a pile of beautiful ladies and Quentin Tarantino. And all I can see is I have my mouth open like a 2-car garage. It's depressing. But other than that.
And you can't say, do me a solid and come back and take
hey, hold
one
on.
More.
Stay here, buddy. We're going to do this again. No,
take
I
mean, over,
clearly
take
not. But yeah, exactly. The lighting's terrible for this. Take over, buddy. So that was when I met him, and that was pretty great. So I was able to tell him that. And then I've been in the room, but I did see him once when I went to that screening for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Someone kept approaching him, and like the third time they approached, he goes, I said hello. Okay. What do you want to do? Do you want a hug and a kiss? Okay. Like he was so mad at this guy. It was terrible. So
you're not going anywhere. Yeah.
Well, he's just a dude who, that's another thing is he doesn't suffer fools. Like he'll lose his mind. And getting to the point of him retiring for the 10th movie, and you talked about how they're talking about bringing it back. Dude, he says anything at these screenings. they ask him, like, I saw three different things where people ask him what's in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction, and he kind of tries to tap dance with the whatever you think it is. And then people will say, well, I thought it was this. He's like, yep. Like, because he, you know what I mean?
He doesn't want to get
into
it. And
so he'll, right. But he's also, I mean, because when he announced his 10th movie as the movie critic, I was kind of surprised because he'd been talking supposedly to Maya Hawke about doing a Kill Bill 3 and her taking over for her mom, Uma.
Hmm. Wow.
Because Maya Hawke is in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
She's great. You know what I mean? She's a very good actor, too.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know who else is in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? And yeah, this will crack
Andy,
you up. Andy, if you remember it.
Andy McDowell's daughter.
She is also in it. Quali, not, she is. You can't stop staring at her. She is unbelievable.
She's great
beautiful.
In that movie, yeah.
And in that movie, that part at this bus stop when he says he's going to pick her up and she screams at the cops and he goes, oh no. It's just, it's so perfect. But there's a great, you know, Brad Pitt buys the acid-soaked cigarette.
Yeah.
And he goes, hey, man, I got the cigarette. It's soaked acid. He goes, I bought it from a hippie on the street. And they cut to him buying it from the hippie on the street.
Yeah.
The hippie on the street is the woman who played Uma Thurman's daughter in Kill Bill 2.
Oh, my gosh.
He remembers, man.
He does.
He brings people back.
All right. Let me ask you, what do you think about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Mike? Where is that on your top 9 or 10, if you include True Romance? Or where do you rank that?
Oh, True Romance is so good, dude. It's great. Well, I will tell you, when I walked out of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the first time I saw it, I kind of had trouble with it. Because I felt it was long, and I was like, I don't know if I need the whole filming of the television show in there. You know what I mean? With the cut, roll it back, right. Bring it, all those things. That was the first time I saw it. But then a week later I apologize. When the screening I saw was a week before my birthday. Then I went and saw it on my birthday. I wanted to see it again. And I thought it was a masterpiece the second time I saw it. And then I've seen it subsequently probably 10 times. And I love every second of it.
I am so with you. I did not know much about it. And I love the title and I like Tarantino. So I went to see it and I left the same way you did. I'm like, what did I just see? Like not knowing anything about it. And I'm like, is Manson going to do this to these people? And am I going to have to watch this? Like, but then I'm like, oh, of course it's Tarantino. He ends things the way he wants them to be. And I went back the next day. I said, Joe, come and see this with me. I got to see if I liked it as much as I think I really liked it. And it's my favorite Tarantino film, Mike. It's just,
boy,
I love it.
Yeah. You know what did it for me? The second time I saw it, I watched it differently. There was less expectation, less like, because again, the trailer did lead you to believe it was going to be about the Manson family.
Yeah.
Clearly. And then it's not. And then you're kind of trying to make sense of it. And you realize, oh, it's a character piece about aging. And maybe it's him telling the story of how he fails aging in the industry. And is he not as quick on the draw as he used to be? And is he not as sharp as it? And is DiCaprio basically playing a version of Tarantino where he's getting older and he doesn't know how he's going to fit into this whole new way of doing
interesting
things. And then at the end when he gets invited up by Sharon Tate and you get the hand, you know, the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood .. I went, this is a fable.
Yeah,
this isn't a movie. It's a fable about what could have happened and what might have been and what maybe will be.
He just changes his interpretation history to his how he wanted it to be. It's so,
and I love it, and I love
too.
It so much because there was a controversy at the time. And when I say controversy, you know, social media, people were mad for 5 minutes and then it went away. And then an hour later, people were mad again. You know how it is. People are dumb. So people were upset about the fact that the way Bruce Lee was portrayed.
Yeah.
And there was people who were saying it was stereotypical the way it was portrayed, even though the guy did a really good Bruce Lee impression, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then they were saying there was no way that like Brad Pitt would beat up Bruce Lee. And it reminded me of when we were kids. I remember you might have been, there was a Little Rascals episode, but they were fighting over who would win, Flash Gordon or Tarzan. He is not, he is too. And I'm like, that's this argument. It's the stupidest argument I've ever heard. Because you know what? Tarantino wrote a movie starring a guy who could beat up Bruce Lee. He wasn't saying Brad Pitt could beat up Bruce Lee.
Right.
He was saying Cliff Booth, because again, when they asked Tarantino about it, he goes, Cliff Booth did tours in Vietnam and he did terrible things and he killed people and that's who he is. And it's just simmering under the surface. And it came out, he even smirked through that fight. He's like, cause he knew what he was going to do. He goes, that's the character I wrote.
Right.
It wasn't some dismissal of Bruce Lee. If anything, it was a hardening of the legend of Cliff Booth.
That's great. And it's interesting you say that about the TV show. My guest, by the way, is Mike Schmidt. He is joining us on the interwebs from Los Angeles. Very funny comedian and a huge Tarantino fan. And Mike, you're the perfect guy to have on tonight because I've been wanting to talk about this stuff for a long time. When you said that about the TV show, I kind of felt that way too. But to me, DiCaprio's best acting is that scene in his trailer where he's so mad at himself because he can't get it together. That to me made all of that worth it. And I agree, maybe he could have done without some of that, but the whole movie was just hypnotic.
Upon a second viewing, I disagree. He needed it. It showed you who DiCaprio was and him coming to grips with the fact that maybe he wasn't as good as he used to be and then beating himself up and literally talking about he's going to put a bullet in his head if he doesn't get it right on the next take.
Yeah.
And then comes through with this unbelievable take where everybody goes, they lose their mind. You know what I mean? Just
right.
It's a story of triumph in that moment. You know what I mean? Because he's really not taking it seriously. He's, you know, the day before he's floating in the pool, you know, drinking a whiskey sour and he's not, to him, it's just a run of the mill job because it's not Bounty Law anymore. He's not on the way up. He's on the way down. I mean, he's even thinking about scoring for pilot season. You know what I mean? He knows he's just going through the motions. And then when he chili dips it and he gets on his ass in the trailer and then comes through with a performance that makes everybody go, whoa. And then when she's like, that is the best acting I've ever seen. And he's like,
oh, that was cool too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's crying.
He's crying because he realizes that I am still this good. I can do this. I just need to pay attention and be good again.
So how do you rank? If you had to rank, just give me the top three, top five, or your worst 20. Not worst.
Well,
I
will tell you the one I enjoyed the least.
Okay.
And that was Hateful Eight.
Okay.
Because there's a few things in it. Like I've only watched it like three times. I saw it in the theater. I was dating somebody who lived in Wisconsin at the time.
Oh,
and I took her on Christmas night or Christmas Eve night when it opened. It was the Roadshow, the 75 millimeter, the big, you know, the big extravaganza giant screen. So we saw it in Wisconsin and she'd never seen any Tarantino movies. So I was like, this was her introduction to Tarantino.
Oh, nice.
Like, and she knew that I worshiped him. And we go to see it. And as it's unfolding, I'm like, Kurt Russell's great. And I think Jennifer Jason Leigh is great. And Samuel L. Jackson is amazing. Walton Goggins. The performances are really good. It's just the choices that Tarantino makes. Like, there was an intermission. There was actually an intermission in the movie. And then we left and went to the lobby. We came back. And you come back from intermission. And that's when the Tarantino voiceover gives you the kind of the exposition of the coffee piece. And also, the first segment, the first, you know, before intermission, ended with Samuel L. Jackson telling the story of, I don't want to spoil it, but he does a terrible thing, like a monstrous thing.
Right.
But because he does it to a villain, we're supposed to laugh. Like, and it's played for laughs. And I'm in a theater. Granted, you know, I've had this experience before. Like, I was on the road. I saw Pulp Fiction. And my favorite scene is when they're cleaning the car because the dialogue is so out of bounds.
Right.
And these four old people turned and looked at me because I was laughing. They're like, oh, like they're disgusted with me. And then they walked out like they couldn't, you know, they were angry. Well, in Hateful Eight, I'm in a theater full of people like that as Samuel L. Jackson tells a story that then is being shown. Like they're literally showing it in flashback when it's occurring. I don't want to, I'll say it if you want me to, but it's rough.
You can say it. I mean, we're on live radio, but use your best.
Hey, it's not vulgar, but it's in the movie.
Right.
Samuel L. Jackson is talking to Bruce Dern and Bruce Dern is a racist, a Civil War officer.
Right.
And Samuel L. Jackson tells him to his face the story of how he raped Bruce Dern's son.
Dear. Gosh.
And then we see it in flashback. We see it happen. We're seeing it as he's smiling, laughing, and telling it to Bruce Dern. And it's supposed to be played for laughs because the guy he did it to is a racist, horrible piece of trash. But seeing it play out while Samuel L. Jackson is telling the story with glee and right in the face of the father of the guy, you know what I mean? Like, and Dern's a terrible character. The son was a terrible character. Samuel L. Jackson is a murderer and a bounty hunter. And you love Samuel L. Jackson just because of his screen presence. But in that moment, for me, even it was a bit much. I was like, this is rough. This is a really, you know, and I've loved all of his language. I've never had a problem with it. And I wasn't offended or anything, but I was just like, cause you could feel it in the theater where everybody's like,
that's
like,
so
it
great.
Just, cause it just got worse. And so then of course I'm with a date and she's never seen any of his movies. All she knows is he's my hero. And he does it like a 6 minute piece about a guy getting raped for laughs. And so we got to go in the lobby and I'm like, you want a popcorn or to break up with me? What do you want to do here? I don't even know.
The side eye. Well,
right. Why not? And why wouldn't you?
Hey, Mike.
Because even I.
Hold tight. We'll be right back. And we will put a button on this Quentin Tarantino talk with Mike Schmidt on Nightlight. More coming up.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show. Looking for a place to kick back, grab a bite, vibe out on great music? Look no further than the Rigby in Madison. They're not just a pub. They're where the action is, with something different every day. Rigby Oki Mondays, Trivia Tuesdays, Single Nights on Wednesdays, and live music Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Located a block off the Capitol Square at 119 East Main Street, stop by and take a tour of the venue spaces for your next private party. And the rooftop space is now available. For venue reservations and details, email Chelsea at events.rigby@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weikert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
Listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
So, Ben Chan just stopped by. I thought he was coming to drop off some of his Jeopardy winnings, but he just kind of popped in. I said, let's have you on the show next week, Ben. He goes, no, I have commitment issues. I just wanted to pop by impromptu. I said, well, pop by next week and we'll talk. It's good to see Ben, even if it was fleeting. My guest right now is Mike Schmidt, and we are talking about Quentin Tarantino. How did that end up, Mike, your date with the I know you guys dated for a while, but what was the aftermath of that evening like?
It was a relationship, so it didn't end that night. But I mean, it was just yet another of the things where she looked at me like, "This is stuff you like." It happened with Terminator. We were going to go see Terminator 4 or something at the theater. So I was like, "All right, you need to know at least the." I go, "Terminator 3, none of those are good." I go, "But we'll watch Terminator 1 and Terminator 2." And I go, "Terminator 2 is both probably great. The best action film ever made."
Love it. Okay. Although you so like it better than the first one.
Oh wait, let me finish.
Okay.
I watched Terminator with her. We sit at on the couch. And it's not working for me. It doesn't land for me. To me, it doesn't hold up. It does not hold up Terminator 1, especially in light of all the things we've seen since. And so I'm even finding myself, because now you got to sit through 2 hours of this with her to convince her we're going to see Terminator 4. And I keep going, look, Terminator 2 is so much better than this. I promise. Like, you know, and Terminator 1 ends and she just goes, yeah, I don't think I want to see that second one. And I'm like, listen to me. Because again, Aliens and Terminator 2 are the linchpins of anyone's action catalog. And so I'm like, listen, it's trust me. Terminator 2 is so, and she wouldn't watch it. So she never saw.
Oh man.
Yeah, Terminator 1, and she was like, "And you like this?" That sort of thing. And I'm like, "Oh my god."
You should have opened with a showstopper. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. There's no doubt. Cuz I wanted to go in order, and also, you know, I didn't know it wouldn't hold up for me cuz I had seen it as a kid. You know, cuz again, you saw this movie, Pete, when you were a kid. Watch it again, man, especially as a filmmaker. And you're going to go, cuz again, the idea of it in 87 or whatever it came out, or 84
maybe.
Yeah. Terminator's 84. Yeah. And 87 is the second one. But yeah. And it introduces a lot of things that we take for granted now.
Right.
But also, it just, for me, it just did not hold up. It didn't.
I have,
but you know that happened with Caddyshack. I watched Caddyshack and it's funny, but it's just a bunch of sketches strung together.
Right. And that's when you watch it with younger people, they say that they're like, yeah, that stuff's funny, but you're right. It's not a great movie maybe, but it's just funny skits. I have you remember Richard Jenny, the comedian?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, of course you do. And
so
he was really good to me. And there was a time we were hanging out a little bit and I convinced him and a woman he was dating and like three other friends of his from New York that we should rent Manhunter and get it on Laserdisc. And, you know, Jenny wasn't interested in like the first 3 minutes. So he just started talking through the whole film to his buddies. And then they'd watch. And I was literally like, this is like, because I'm the guy that picked it out, you know? And it's like, it was hated.
There's nothing worse. Awful. But I'll tell you, if you want to feel better about that, though, you were not wrong in that scenario.
No, I know.
Everyone else in the room is wrong.
Thank you, everyone's Mike. Wrong. I appreciate that.
Manhunter's amazing.
All right. So we got a couple minutes left. Tell me you already said Reservoir Dogs. What after Reservoir Dogs, your favorite Tarantino movie? You've already said your least favorite, and you can include don't include True Romance. Your next favorite after Reservoir Dogs.
I'm going to say there again. It's very hard because they're all very, very close, and I find them to all be fantastic. I'm going to say Kill Bill 1.
Great.
Jackie Brown's probably third. Pulp's amazing. Pulp you can't even rank because it's so different and made him who he was at that time. So Pulp should be like honorary number one always.
That's just how the I dogs feel.
Pulp is his best. You know what I mean? Probably. And again, a lot of, you know what? Sally Menke was his editor up through Bastards. And so they're different because the ones after Bastards, like Django it's got about a half hour. It's too long, maybe.
Right.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I mean, she would have been a different voice for him because she edited all of his stuff up through Bastards. And then she unfortunately passed away. But again, Inglourious Bastards is fantastic. But also for me, it's not.
Same.
It's, you know, but they're not, but it's, that's what I mean. They're all fantastic,
right?
But it's just levels of preference of how you feel. Like during the pandemic, again, I watched them all over again. There's a dude. And again, I love Madsen. So he's in Kill Bill 2 and he has a scene with Carradine at the trailer. And then he has a whole scene with Daryl Hannah where he gets on the phone and a scene with Uma. I love his performance in Kill Bill 2 so much. So, and Robert Forster and Jackie Brown is ridiculous. I've watched that probably three times in the past, like 5 months. Cause it's just on it. I see it streaming and they recommend it. I watch it.
Right.
I watched Pulp Fiction. I hadn't seen it in a while. And again, it holds up clearly. It's just brilliance. And the dialogue is so good in everything. And Django, I mean, again, you forget Django, dude, once he found Christoph Waltz,
yeah,
he became a new muse along with Samuel L. Jackson. So then Bastards and Django are both incredible with him in there. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood might be top five after I've watched it so many times. It's I love it so much.
I do too. I love every frame of that movie. I don't think it's even too long. But I agree with you. Pulp Fiction, I saw that in Indianapolis working the road with Mick Leszczynski. We were in the theater and there were two other people in the theater. And 2 minutes into the movie, I just turned to him and I said, Tarantino is just incredible. Like he just grabbed, there's always that opening scene that's great or music that he chose. And I'm like, I know I'm going to love this film. And Pulp Fiction was like nothing I had ever seen before.
Yeah. And you say, you know, the soundtracks and the music are incredible. There's no doubt. I own all the soundtracks, but his screenplay is music. The language he uses is
great
music.
Point.
The Tim Roth talking to Amy Madigan there the whole time. And you're just, you can't, you're gripped and it's too,
excellent.
You know, and then, I mean, think about Samuel L. and Travolta in the car and then all the way up to the hotel room talking about foot massages, talking about Tony Rocky Horror getting thrown out of a window.
Mayo on
and
the
it's
fries.
Just, yeah. And you can't stop paying attention to it. And it all ties up later. Like, dude, that scene with Travolta and Uma Thurman in the diner when she finally gets, she's like, do you think of something to say? And he's like, I kind of did. And he's all bashful. And she goes, don't be shy. And he's like, I'm not shy, but he won't make eye contact with her.
Right. Right.
And he goes, I want to talk about Antoine. And I love his look. He's so bashful and perfect in that scene.
Yeah.
And she goes, who's talking? He goes, they. And she goes, they talk a lot, don't they? And he just starts giggling. Yeah. He goes, they certainly do.
That's right.
He brought out the best in Travolta. He brought out the best. I mean, he brings out the best in all of his actors. They're just amazing performances.
Mike, this is fun, buddy. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks.
We got to get the Larry Bird next time. Caitlin, a whole bunch of other stuff, but we'll do it again soon. I hope.
Talk more Tarantino if you want. I don't care.
Or even that, because I got a couple more Tarantino things I didn't get to. One of them was in Indianapolis, so I'll share that with you next time too. But
love it.
So much fun. Thanks, buddy. Have a great night.
Thanks, dude.
You're welcome. That's Mike Schmidt. Check out the 40-Year-Old Boy podcast. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Great stuff. Very funny guy and a phenomenal storyteller. I'd also like to thank Lisa Hale for being here. And check out that movie tomorrow night in Sheboygan, Chandler Wilde and the, Conrad, help me, name of the film again.
The Dancing Monkey.
The Dancing Monkey. Tomorrow night in Sheboygan and then in Wisconsin Rapids. Thank you for all your texts. Great stuff tonight on the animated movie question. Loved it. We'll be back tomorrow night with 7,000 Apart. We'll be in studio and Mike Siegel will be here in the second hour. We'll be talking 80s TV. This is Pete Schwab and Nightlight. Thanks for joining me. Good night, Wisconsin.
Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, we'll find out about movies playing around Madison.
From Jim Healy, the director of Cinematheque Summer Series.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 until 8. The John and Gordy Show.
I've told you 1,000 times in the show, and no one has believed me, but I'm apolitical. I don't look at things that way. I want to see what works and what doesn't,
okay.
What saves us money and what will help most people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the people who have already made it, who are wealthy, already have benefited from a system that we all have put into. They should pay back a little bit.
Weekday mornings 6 until 8 on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Mad Radio. WMDX 1580 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison,
and always streaming.